Okay, good afternoon, everybody. How is everybody? Are you all enjoying Tech Ed? Okay, fantastic. Wonderful to see everybody here. I recognize a few faces. I must just say, by the way, you're a much better audience than yesterday. They were crap. Also, a very good afternoon or a good morning or wherever you are in the world if you're joining us on Channel 9 as well. It's nice that I really appreciate you joining us. Just to say that I'm going to be providing some extras to this session, or any videos, all the links, downloads, documents. In fact, for all my sessions, you can find them on the SkyDrive there at Andy Malone. If you sign up, I posted that link last night, so you're welcome to download that. So, very good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to this session, my first of two sessions this afternoon. This is Cybercrime, the ultimate 2013 kind of survival guide. Because there's awful lot going on in the world. And basically, what I'm going to look at in this session is the top 10 kind of threats, the top 10 threats and possible mitigations that you can do. So who am I? Well, my name is Andy Malone. I'm an MVP in enterprise security, very much like Marcus and Paula. I'm a senior instructor with a company called Quality Training based in the UK. We do infrastructure and security training worldwide. I teach military folks, I teach government people, agency people. We do a whole bunch of stuff like that. Although I'm based in the UK, I'm not there very often, so when I walk in the door at home, my dog attacks me because it doesn't really know who I am. So that says the agenda is simply the top 10 cybercrime issues of 2013. Now, there may be a few surprises in there for you. You might be surprised at some of these. You may agree with them, you may not agree with them, but I will do my best anyway. So coming in at number 10 is a zombie will rise. Okay? You have to have at least one picture of a zombie in a presentation, right? Well, as it works out, I've actually got a few. So what am I talking about here? Of course, I'm talking about the botnet. It's a true weapon of mass destruction. Botnets have been around for some time now, but they're definitely on the increase, and they're definitely becoming more powerful, and they're definitely becoming a major weapon of choice. Okay, they don't just distribute spam, but they also distribute malware, and also you can essentially they provide a service if you're prepared to pay for it. So if you're looking to produce a malware attack, a spamming attack, and you need a little bit of infrastructure to do it, you can essentially rent the space on a botnet. On saying that, there are very legitimate botnets. I remember the BBC, they have a show called Click. They actually set up a legitimate botnet just to do some research last year, and it was all very interesting. So typically for hire, very, very difficult to define, quite a tricky thing to bring down, and I know that Microsoft have done a very good job in bringing down a number in the last few years, and we'll talk about those. So essentially, what is this amazingly automated delivery system known as the botnet? Well, essentially, this is one of the tools that's responsible for delivering spam all over the world. So, you know, if you see that Viagra mail coming in, I mean, some of you may need it, I don't know. Also, the classic drive-by attack, the click-to-fraud type attack that I'm sure you've all seen. So these particular delivery systems are still very, very successful. So these things deliver millions of emails every day, and essentially you just need two or three clicks in order to make your money. So for the bad guys, this is a very, very lucrative kind of delivery system. So of course, how is it delivered? Well, obviously there's the drive-by attack. We've also got keyloggers as well. DDoS attacks as well, so it's a very good way of delivering those. So this is really a very much a growing and serious problem, and what we've found is that this type of attack is becoming more and more powerful. So these are some of the famous ones. I'm sure you'll recognize these. There are many more as well. These are very much well documented on the web. You can go and you can read about them. There's some very, very good white papers that talk about the types of delivery systems that these obviously deliver. Hell, you can even go in and you can actually create your own botnet. So there's well documented websites. And there's services that I'll show you a little bit later on where you can actually hire very, very powerful ones as well. So you can build your own botnet software very, very easily indeed. So how do we contain the infection? I've got a story for you, by the way. Brad Pitt's new movie, the zombie movie that's coming out this summer, was actually filmed in Glasgow, very close to where I live in Scotland. World War Z, that's the movie I'm thinking about, World War Z. Now, I actually saw Brad in his movie, and they basically destroyed Glasgow city centre with all these zombies running around. So it looks like a pretty scary movie, by the way, so this kind of reminds me of that. So how, as IT professionals, how as security people do we actually contain this potential threat? Well, to be honest, it's a little tricky one, this. I think really top of the list is definitely end user education. Because if you don't have any end user education, users, in many cases, they have no idea what a botnet is and what the impact is them. All they care about is the fact that, hey, I've been offered Viagra and I really need some. Not that I do. So basically, it provides host-based antivirus software. Now, to be honest, Microsoft is doing a really good job with their free antivirus tools, which is best, to be honest. They're pretty much of a muchness, and I'm sure if you saw Marcus's session yesterday, remember that known spyware, known antivirus, really only kind of contains about 20% of known viruses anyway. We also have a number of cloud-based services. For example, if you sign up for Office 365, Office 365 has something like Exchange Online Protection, and that whole kind of used to be known as the artist, formerly known as FOPI, Forefront Online Protection for Exchange. So that's all kind of integrated in there, and the idea is that it catches as much of this junk as possible. I know it's a kind of a common or a very, very easy thing to say, but obviously ensure that the firewall is enabled as well. It's amazing how many companies that we go into and we do testing, and simple things like there's no firewall enabled, the antivirus software is out of date, maybe they've not updated it, or often they do a lot of products like deep freeze. You know, deep freeze, it freezes the system, but of course the problem with that is it doesn't keep the antivirus up to date. One person downloads one email and of course the damage is already done on your network. Definitely implement a intrusion detection system. Actually, I would strike that and I would probably say go for the intrusion prevention system. There's actually some very good free ones out there. What I'll do is I'll list a bunch of these and I'll stick them in my SkyDrive later on so that you know where they are. So beware. So as you can see there, be careful of getting infected by one of these. So having a good kind of proactive attitude, having a proactive defense stature will go a long way for you in prevention. And that's really what we're looking for. And what we've actually looked at now is a lot of these attacks, they're coming in on multiple vectors. So they're performing multiple types of attacks with one type of injection. So there we go. By the way, I'll just show you some websites here I was just looking at here. So for example, hack forums, we've got botnets for sale, market, and all of this is completely open. There's Android botnets as well. There's mobile phone botnets that you can install. So we're not talking about products just limited to PCs. So coming in at number nine then, coming in at number nine in our top 10 is a close second, the distributed denial of service attack. And I was trying to come up with a picture, and my original picture was a smashed iPhone, but they didn't like that at Microsoft. So I changed it to an ice cream. So you can just imagine this kid, she's got this wonderful ice cream, she's about to take the first lick and it falls on the floor. That is a denial of service attack. She's been denied the pleasure of her ice cream. So DDoS, again, is nothing new. This has been around, a lot of these attacks have been around now for at least 10 years, many of these. So this is really nothing new. What is new, though, is they are getting more powerful. They're getting distributed in things like types of zombie botnet types attacks, so they're becoming much more dangerous. And also, they're now obviously being used for government military use as well, which makes them very interesting. So in a nutshell, they basically overwhelm a network, whether it be an individual machine, whether it be a website, whether it be a company. So obviously, you've been denied access to the internet. What does that mean for you as a business? Potentially, you could lose millions of dollars in lost revenue, potentially. So basically, it can seriously disrupt the victim's business. So again, this is was a classic attack on CNN, of course. CNN, a major news organization, so they lose their network. And of course, that means that what are you going to do for your news? You're going to go elsewhere, so they're going to lose revenue in that. So potentially, that could be quite serious. Now, of course, you think, okay, well, that's just a business, that's a commercial organization. But when you start looking at a government or a country's websites, there are well-known attacks, for example, in Syria, in Egypt. You know, when there's revolution, one of the first things a government does is performs a denial of service attack and shuts down websites. So you can see by the numbers, these are getting bigger, they're getting faster, and also they're getting more and more complex to actually locate as well. So in recent years, these are some of the big ones. Spam House, of course, was the huge one last year. WordPress, CNN, even the White House, they've all been attacked with DDoS. And the problem with these technologies is that they really talk at a very, very basic level. So when we talk about the actual types of attack, a volumetric attack, for example, essentially just, they basically do all the same things, but just at different levels. Essentially, tens of gigabits per second. So you can imagine this is pretty much what it's like if you're trying to get everybody into TechEd. And there's only one single door, it's just not going to happen. Other two types, we've got layer 2 and also we've got layer 7 types attacks as well, so we call it a SYN flood attack, and also there's the HTTP GET type attack on a particular website as well. Either of these will have the same kind of impact, the same kind of damage that you can do. So when we talk about the actual software itself, again, if I go to the internet here, if I just close that one down, you can see here that, first of all, DDoS, there are a number of companies that are offering services in the cloud. This is just one that I found at random. Again, Microsoft do a really good article on TechNet about it as well. So this is really, really good reading, folks. I recommend that you go and have a look. Shows you completely exactly how they work, how to detect them, and also Microsoft's advice on how to stop them as well. So again, a couple of really useful websites there. So in terms of protecting yourself, the problem with this type of software is that the software itself is really, really easy to get hold of. So this is, for example, SocketSoft produced this security testing tool, of course, that these are not hacking tools, they are testing tools. So it's very, very useful for you guys to actually test your own websites with. Bearing in mind, don't test it on a competitor or business partner, of course, this would be illegal. And also, potentially, don't try, if I was in the UK and I wanted to bring down an American website with this type of tool, of course, under US law, that potentially is an act of war, yes, under US law, which is very interesting. So essentially here, basically select my target, determine the number of packets that I want to send to them, how do you want to do it, I can verify the URL, so it's done that. And am I ready to go? I don't think so. I'll never speak at TechEd again if I hit that button. So that's the first one. The other one, of course, is a very famous one. This is called the Low Orbit Ion Cannon, which is a great name, by the way, for a product. I'm sure you've maybe seen this one. Again, using a very, very similar type of attack. Again, you basically just set your target. It can either be an IP address, can be a domain name. You get the IP address, and then you can basically, I'll let you see it a little bit more. You can basically configure whether you want it to be a HTTP, HTTPS type attack. Either of these tools are very, very successful in what they do. And again, for legal reasons, I'm not going to run these because I don't want to get myself into trouble. The other day, Marcus showed you, if you'll excuse the expression, FOCA. The FOCA project is a free tool, actually produced by an MVP, a fellow MVP. This is the free version. The full paid version does some pretty scary stuff, by the way. But if that's not bad enough, this will completely circumvent your network. It will show you if there are any open documents on the network. You can download those documents, and you can even look at the usernames and the machine IP addresses on that network. They've just recently released a new product called Evil FOCA. I love that name. You know, my PM sat down there. She's going, "You'll never work at Microsoft again." Okay, so you can see here what it's doing now is it's going to go through and it's going to detect everybody in the room. It detects all the routers, all the machines. And I can now say, hey, you know, what kind of attack do I want to do? Do I want to do a man-in-the-middle type attack, whether it be IPv4 or IPv6? Do you want to do a denial-of-service attack? And this is a very, very powerful tool, by the way, for denial-of-service attacks. Incidentally, I mentioned that if you sign up to my Twitter account, I have basically put all my content in here. So there's my slides there. I've put in all the websites that I'm looking at today and then some, I would say. You've also got BYOD security, some documents. I did an Office 365 thing yesterday. All the videos that I'm showing today as well, you'll see there. So again, you can sign up for that at Andy Malone on Twitter. So this is a really, really cool tool, by the way. So the only thing I would say about that is use it with caution, please. The one thing I would also say is any of these tools that you use, links that I recommend, if they screw up your system, it's got nothing to do with me, okay? So that is that's those couple of tools there. So going back to the slide. So it's pretty simple. You run one of those tools, you bring a website down. Now for a small business, again, it might not be a big issue, but for a very, very large business, that could have serious financial implications. And depending on where you are in the world, that is also seriously illegal as well. Even actually, to mention that, depending on where you are in the world, actually having these tools is illegal. So do be careful of that. These are some of the more nasty versions of those tools. So again, this is a particularly nasty one, a very powerful one as well. That's a web-based one. And also, there are a number of organizations do the dirty deed for you on receipt of a payment. And these are obviously have got botnets on the background and in the background, and they're very, very powerful. And these are the people basically to watch out for. I'm going to do a live session of Tor a little bit later on, and I'll show you this is where you can get this stuff. Assuming that you want to know how to protect yourself, of course. So, mitigation. How do you mitigate against the denial of service attack? Actually, it's quite tricky, but there's some kind of recommendations here that we say. So, first of all, there's no single silver bullet here. Awareness is definitely the key thing. So you can see there in a recent survey, the vast majority of the people surveyed had absolutely no idea what a denial of service attack was. They just thought, hey, I'm not getting internet access. They didn't realize what was actually causing it. Definitely have a DDoS response plan. If you don't have one, it's definitely something that you should be writing into your security policy. Couple of things there. IPS, I mentioned, intrusion prevention system, that definitely goes a long way. And a couple of things that you can do on DNS. So implement DNSSEC on your DNS servers. Again, this was a feature that was introduced in 2008 and 2008 R2. and now, of course, 2012. Very, very simple feature. Switch it on. Very, very easy to do. Again, does it guarantee? No, of course not. But again, it's giving you another hoop that the bad guy has to walk through. Also, another thing as well, limit recursion on DNS and only use authorized clients and send, replicate only to authorized servers, not to everybody. Again, that will obviously reduce things for you. Utilize the host anti-DDoS settings, so actually use these settings. And again, make sure that you've got enough CPU memory and so on to actually prevent, for example, don't have your website on a web server that's only got 4 megabytes of RAM or something. And definitely have some kind of monitoring. There are some great monitoring tools out there, System Center, for example, and again, there are some of those in the cloud features that will help protect your business. So again, in the white papers that I've put in my SkyDrive, there are some top tips that you can use in order to protect yourself there. Okay, so that's the two. So we've talked about the zombie, the botnet type attack, and we've spoke about the DDoS, or the dynamic denial of service attack. So coming in at number 8 then of my top 10, a question I'm asked all the time is, hey, how safe is my stuff in the cloud? You know, I'm thinking about moving to the cloud. I want to put my data up there. How safe is it? Or you might say, hey, you know, for compliance reasons, I want to be secure. What kind of security do they guarantee? Well, first of all, I call this the deadly sins. So first of all, there is 7 deadly sins that you've got to be aware of in terms of cloud computing. First of all, ignorance. Do never, never, never just put stuff in the cloud. First of all, it might be illegal because you're putting data off premises, and in some professions, depending on where you are in the world, this would be actually illegal. And also, if that data was stolen, if you had any kind of insurance, the insurance would not be valid. So again, you would lose out on that. Ambiguity as well. So don't agree to contracts unless you absolutely understand them. I mean, I'm guilty as the next guy when I install a piece of software and it goes, do you accept the agreement? And you just automatically go, yeah, of course I do. Just click yes. But the thing is, when our data is up in the cloud, you can't afford to do that. As a business, you can't afford to do that. Personally, I can't afford to do that. So you need to know what you're signing up for. Remember, there's a big difference between these free services and the professional services. So there's a big, big difference, for example, with the Windows Live type platform, your personal SkyDrive, for example, and the SkyDrive Pro service, which is offered by Office 365. I use Office 365, by the way, as an example, because I've been doing a lot of consulting in it. Doubt. Okay, so make sure that you have some kind of assurance. What kind of assurance do you know that that cloud provider is a good cloud provider, and you know that their data is going to be backed up and that you've got access to it? Also, for legal reasons as well, if the cloud provider goes down or goes bust, what's going to happen to your data? What kind of guarantees do you have in that situation? So that's really, really important. Number 4, trespass. Okay, putting data in the cloud, as I said, is potentially illegal. So again, make sure that you obviously read the T's and C's, the terms and conditions. Now, services like Windows Azure, Microsoft Office 365, they are often tailored for each specific country. So, for example, not all the countries in the world, you're going to get all the features. So some features are actually restricted. So, for example, in Dubai, Skype, for example, is restricted in Dubai, and so on. Link is restricted in other parts of the world. So, number 5, disorder. The problem with a potential problem with the cloud is that you just throw everything in there. Remember that the cloud is a utility, potentially. It's a utility, and you need to treat it as such. So you need to organize your work carefully and methodically, in order to avoid problems. Also, misguided to believe that the infrastructure is ready for the cloud. So, of course, are you going to migrate to the cloud? I did a session yesterday on hybrid mode in Microsoft Exchange. So are you going to actually migrate to the cloud? Or if you're a financial business, if you're a pharmaceutical, a medical, there may be compliance reasons or requirements that require you to have your data on premises. In that case, Office 365, you're looking at what we call hybrid mode there. And hybrid mode means that you can keep some mailboxes on premises and other mailboxes in the cloud. And it works actually very, very well. And of course, is the cloud 100%? Okay, as you can see here, I'm not picking on anybody at all. No cloud provider, in fact, no ISP, no company would ever say, I'm going to give you 100% assurance. Nobody can do that. You can't give 100%. There's, disasters, there's war, there's, freak weather conditions. But what we can do is we can basically provide you with a good, solid service level agreement that's going to basically say, hey, if we do go down, then you know it's only going to be for a short time. We're going to have you back up and running. It's actually quite interesting because Microsoft's cloud infrastructure is actually divided into different regions throughout the world. So, for example, I'm in Europe, obviously, and all the data in the European data center is basically stored in the Dublin data center in Ireland. And that data is then replicated to Amsterdam. So I have a lot of customers in Europe going, I don't want my data going to the US, or I don't want it going through that. And it's not. So for legal, for European reasons, it's called Blue Harbor, that data remains in that actual location. So it's not replicated. It's the same as the APAC, the Asia Pacific region as well, and also the US. There's some data, financial data, that is not permitted to leave the US. So first of all, mitigations. So my number one tip, do not rely on free stuff. Yesterday I spoke about the dangers of companies like Facebook. I've got nothing against Facebook or Twitter, but they make their money through marketing. Okay? I mentioned also the free SkyDrive that Microsoft does. If you go in and look at the terms and conditions of that, it says, hey, we make no guarantees to back up your data. There is no guarantees there. Now, they do, and they have never not backed up your data, but they actually say that it's not guaranteed. But if you want to back up your data, this is why you've now got the SkyDrive desktop tool. Whereas, if you store your data in the likes of Office 365, you've got a product called SkyDrive Pro, it goes into a SharePoint document library, you have an actual service level agreement there. So it's written in stone that you will, or you are protected there. So again, it's really, really important that you read that. Also, with the cloud as well, make sure that you try before you buy. That's really important. Actually know what you're getting yourself into. And also ensure that you back up your data. So if you're concerned about the fact that you need an on-site backup of your data, you are responsible for that, not the cloud. The cloud is a utility. Remember that. It's a service. Also, you need to check out what compliance the cloud actually has as well. Now, Microsoft is, hand up there. They're very good at that. Again, consider using third-party encryption. So there's a slide that's just coming up in a moment that shows you how Microsoft encrypts its data in the cloud. Does it encrypt all the data in the cloud? No, it doesn't. Why, Andy, does Microsoft not encrypt all the data into the cloud? Well, as you can imagine, the BitLocker process is quite heavy on CPU time. So if you can appreciate that all this data is coming in being actually encrypted, that's a heck of a lot of processing power going on there. So, of course, you've got to take, that's the security all over, though. You know, you've got to have security versus the, usability. There's a balance there. And very, very important, make sure that the vendor does not share your data. So, again, I mentioned this yesterday, organizations like Facebook, Flickr, a lot of these free services openly admit to sharing your data. And if you post any photos, for example, of your kids, You might find yourself on a bus downtown and there's a billboard poster of you and your kids. And again, that's open for business. Anybody can use those pictures. So again, be very, very careful with that. So how does Office 365 secure your data? Well, the good thing is all email content is encrypted using AES encryption 256, which is great. All the disks, so all the data that's stored locally in Microsoft Exchange is encrypted with BitLocker. That doesn't just include the databases, it includes things like transaction logs and things like that. It also transports all the mail between your servers and Office 365 in TLS security, transport layer security. Key thing there, though, at the bottom is it does not encrypt SharePoint data. So again, if you want to encrypt SharePoint data, there's a little add-on that you can get in Office 365. And again, this provides what we call rights management services for you. But there are some really good third-party tools out there as well. So just giving you a quick whiz through of Office 365 in terms of compliance. If I go to, let's say, over here. So just log on. Oops. Okay, so Office 365. Let me just show you how Microsoft are dealing with the compliance issue. So I've got, if I go into my users and groups here, I've got a whole bunch of users. And I'm going to go into my admin area and into Microsoft Exchange. And in Exchange here, you can see I've got all my mailboxes. You've now got a new area in 2013, or this latest wave of 365, called Compliance Management. So this is basically where you can place accounts on what we call legal hold. So if I assume that Chandler has been a bad boy and has been downloading porn or something that's not in the interests of the company, or we think that he's been fleecing the company, he's been stealing data, what you want to do is you probably want to put that account on legal hold. Now, by putting that account on legal hold, basically, data continues to flow, but Chandler can't go in and he can't delete anything. So again, and it also makes it particularly useful for forensics persons to go in and actually look at all of this. So the other thing as well is e-discovery. So the ability to be able to go in and search through every mailbox. Now, that's not just for forensics people or security people. That is also for HR people, human resources. If you need to find something, you can actually have that permission. So that's really good. Auditing, of course, has always been something that companies have wanted. So the ability to go in and actually, I want to audit my users, I want to audit my administrators, I want to know what they're doing. Can I do that? Yes, you can. And we now have a number of very detailed reports that you can see here. So you can run things like mailbox owner report. There's an e-discovery and hold. There's an administrator group role, which is great. So who are your administrators in your company? And you can also perform full mailbox audits as well. So not just things like typical types of journal files, but the full log files, which make it really good. You've also got things like exporting the administrator audit log. So, the administrator is admissible here. So if you suspect that you've got a rogue administrator, you've now got something to back that up because you've got logs for that. So nobody is above the law in this case, not even the administrator. One of my real favorite features is data loss prevention, so DLP. So you can now have DLP policies in 365. And what this means is, if you're typing in an email and you might say, hey, here's my credit card information, and you can go and order that book that you wanted. So what DLP does, it actually says, hey, We have a data policy here that says you shouldn't really transmit those types of numbers. And it actually detects that it's actually a credit card number. And it says, I don't think that you want to do that. So looking at all the different types of policies, by the way, there are a whole bunch of policies. And again, these cover very much worldwide. So you can see here from Australia to Canada to the US to the UK, Germany, all over the world. So again, this is a good example of how Microsoft are showing compliance in the cloud. The other thing that I really like as well is, you know, when you get email messages, it might be from a particular supplier, a particular vendor, it's really nice to know that that could be a potentially important email. It might have financial information on. So what you can do is the user can right-click that email and they can basically assign a retention tag on that email. So again, I can go in, this is the default one here, and you can see that we've got a number of retention tags here, whether you want to keep it for a year or 5 years or 3 years or whatever. Again, it will retain that data accordingly. So as well as the retention policies themselves, you can actually go into the individual retention tags and you can create them for your business. So really, really easy to do, by the way. Finally, of course, every email system will also have the journaling rules as well. So again, you can set up journaling here as well for that. The other thing that we also have is the Exchange Online protection. So we've got malware filters, content, spam filters, inbound and outbound. You can block IP addresses inbound and outbound. You can control things like mail flow. So you might be familiar with rules in Microsoft Outlook. So by doing those same rules here, you can actually enforce those rules for the entire company. And it's really, really easy to do. You can also configure things like accepted domains and who am I going to allow connections to. So you can see that I started teaching 365 about almost 3 years ago now. And from those early days, you can see how far they've come on and how important things like compliance and having that kind of legal thing is really important now. So there we go. That's just a little of Office 365. Let me just go back. Oops. Have a quick drink. Okay. So, number 7 in my top 10. So, the rise of the hacktivists. And I think this video more than says it all.
Your secrets keep me peaceful. Your lies keep me safe. You are satisfied with my ignorance. And you are in control. But we aren't aware. We are anonymous. We do not forgive. Forget.
The rise of these types of hacker groups. This is nothing new, by the way. Activists have been around for many, many years. But hacktivism is now becoming, a bit of an issue, I would say. Hacktivists are not motivated by money. They're not motivated. They don't have political motivations. They don't have religious motivations. They do it for a whole bunch of reasons. They're very, very unpredictable players. And the thing about anonymous, of course, is anybody could be anonymous. The person next to you could be anonymous. It's probably the world's most famous hacktivist group. And it basically says they've got millions of potential members. They're known for classic attacks So, of course, they were defending the WikiLeaks case, they've defended Pirate Bay, they've attacked British institutions such as the BBC, they've attacked MI5 and other large organisations. So they do it for a reason. So to say that they basically want to stand up and say, we want to work together as one body. Now, the principles of Anonymous are quite admirable. They want to stand up and they want to do something that's right. So if they see injustice in the world, they want to stand up and say, you know, that's wrong. We want to be a voice for that. So they want to present this unified voice. They want to stand up for honesty and openness. And they very much are a trumpet for freedom. But the problem with this type of organization is that there is little or no structure to this group. And the problem is I can stick a mask on and say, hey, I'm anonymous. I can post a video and say, hey, I'm anonymous. So the problem with this, there's no cohesion between them. And of course, anybody can be anonymous, including the government. So there was a case recently where North Korea was attacked. There was a big computer attack in North Korea. And again, who did it? Anonymous did it. Did they? Who knows? So, again, what groups like Anonymous need to do is they maybe need to step forward and say, okay, we need to step into the political fold. Obviously, it's a good way of getting notice. One of the huge dangers of being anonymous, of course, is this, plausible deniability. I didn't know. It had nothing to do with me. And we're not just talking about Anonymous as well. There are many, many resources that, you know, you can be so-called anonymous. There are websites. The Tor search engine, of course, is another one. But, of course, they're all, you start playing this kind of risky game. And the thing about this, there is a very fine line between an activist or a hacktivist and a fanatic. So at what, you know, when is that tipping point? And I talked about that tipping point. I call it the lunge point, that lunge factor. It's all very well saying I've got a knife and, most people just use knives or we would use a gun just for target practice. But to actually point it at somebody and actually take that shot, that is what we call the lunge factor. So what is that point at which the person will tip into and become a fanatic? Okay? And there are many, many sociological and psychological white papers written on something like that. Interesting. Okay, moving along. So in at number six, coming in at number six, trust. I love this picture, by the way. Okay, what am I talking about here? Well, trust. The internet is rife with the word trust. If I have a digital certificate, it must be trustworthy, right? Yeah. If I show you my passport, I am Andy Malone, right? You trust me. Yes? Is this not face, not trustworthy? So, trust is something that as human beings we're taught to believe in. As children, we're taught, you know, go to a policeman, he's trustworthy. Talk to your teacher, they're trustworthy. Talk to a priest, they're trustworthy. So, again, use the internet, it's trustworthy. If we see a padlock, if it says SSL, hey, it must be trustworthy, it's okay. It's amazing to me, actually, I go to many, many companies, and companies still design websites without SSL certificates. It's amazing. And they have open data, and people can put in their credit card numbers without going through SSL. So beware of false prophets here. And this is becoming a real issue. If I go into, there's a couple of websites here, for example. Just close down this one. So if I go into this one, SSL Unblocker, there are a number of websites, of course, that are blocked around the world. So in the UK, of course, the government are standing up and saying, no, we want to stop piracy, we're going to shut down a number of pirate websites. So, of course, reverse proxies are popping up all over the place. So basically, the idea is to circumvent the SSL connections, how you can do it. And this is really quite an interesting website. Again, I'll put all these links later on. But if you go into this deeper, there are links in here. It's called the OnBanner Network. Very, very interesting site. And also, there are a large number of tools that will allow you to actually create fake digital certificates as well. So where was that? Yes. So this is an interesting blog as well. So this is SSL spoofing. So you think you're connected to a secure website. It looks like you are. There's a padlock. There's a digital certificate. But you're not really. And it's being redirected. So SSL redirection is becoming quite a worrying fact. Again, this is a great website, and it actually shows you the tools how to do it. Again, for legal reasons, I'm not going to take this risk here, but I will put these links in my blog. So, a couple of interesting things there. Oh, just before I close that, what was that other one? Ah, yes, this was quite a useful one. Internet tools and resources for open source intelligence. Very useful website, by the way, if you're into security and also protecting your environment. So you probably want to take a look at that, open source intelligence. Okay, just close down this. So, key things, how do you mitigate this particular type of threat? Of course, we need to educate our users. Actually, it's important that if you are using digital certificates, make sure that these are coming from a reputable source. Again, moving to the internet is a risky game, and you need to be prepared for that. So, secure websites, again, make sure that everything's coming from a secure source. Train staff and customers, test absolutely everything, and ensure that you're using the correct stuff. Other ways to protect, of course, usual kind of security here. Use multi-factor authentication as well, and also firewall intrusion detection prevention. Okay, so now we get into the juicy stuff. Now we're coming into our top five. So we've looked at the kind of the lower top five, the bottom five. Now we're coming into the top five. Organized crime versus state-sponsored crime. This is something in the last few years which has really rose. So with the attacks like Stuxnet, which cost millions of dollars to produce, and I'm sorry to say that your President Obama openly admitted to actually being responsible for it. So basic cybercrime organizations, basic cybercrime, these are often hire and fire. So a lot of it comes from basic beginners, if you will, script kiddies. These guys, the tools are easily available, but the problem is because these tools are so easily available, anybody can basically become a hacker. So a lot of these are basically project-based, very, very fluid, membership changes all the time. And basically, it's all about following the money with this type of attack. So again, this could be spam, it could be viruses, drive-by type attacks. So not particularly sophisticated types of organizations. Whereas if you go into advanced cybercrime organizations, there are individuals in Moldova, in Russia, in Eastern Europe, and I won't say Poland because I don't want to upset a Poland, you know. So these are very well organized gangs. Now typically these gangs are large gangs with cybercrime divisions. And their cybercrime divisions are there to kind of work together with their other illegal activities, including prostitution, bootlegging, money laundering, and so on. Okay, so state-sponsored cybercrime, on the other hand, is becoming a real issue. Certainly for the US, obviously, countries like China, but it's not just limited to China and it's not just limited to the US. This is a worldwide problem. So our head of MI5 in the UK has recently said that state-sponsored cybercrime is now becoming an incredible problem here. It's becoming attacked on an industrial scale. So how do you defend against that? How do you defend against... Well, obviously, defending against the unprofessional is fairly simple. You know, we looked at all the kind of things that you can do. But defending against the true professionals, this is a little bit trickier. So awareness here is the key factor. Create an attack response plan as well. Create a recovery plan, backups. This is common sense stuff that every company, every organization should have. Implement DNSSEC on your DNS servers. What about traffic coming to and from branches and HQs? Use things like IPsec. Encrypt all your data. This will help you. Will it fully protect you? Perhaps not, but it will keep them coming through the loops. It will make it harder for them, which is basically what you want. Coming in at number four, cyber warfare. So this is a very different type of cyber attack. Obviously, this is government, military organizations who are either proactively or defensively looking to either defend an attack on a country's infrastructure or actually attack a country's infrastructure. Now, there is an argument out there that state-sponsored software like Stuxnet actually saved probably millions of lives. That was the idea, the whole point that it stopped Iran producing its nuclear weapons. And in such, by attacking that, the idea was that it would save millions of lives. So basically, this is a politically motivated type of attack. This is generally not for money. Okay, we're talking about sponsoring of sabotage against either infrastructure, so water, electricity, transportation systems, industrial espionage, denial of service attacks. And often many of these attacks actually correspond with military action as well. So, for example, if there is a military coup somewhere in the world, you know that there's pretty much going to be a number of cyber attacks, aka Syria, for example. So this is definitely no game, and this is serious stuff. This particular types of malware, this spyware that is actually being produced, is probably undetectable by me or you. Stuxnet was actually never meant to be broadcast. We weren't actually meant to know about Stuxnet. And there are many, many other types of software out there now that, again, we don't know about. So how do we defend against that? Well, we need to train our military, we need to train our law enforcement in these new types of attacks and defensive measures. And many organizations throughout the world, for example, in the UK, MI6, MI5, are actively hiring in computer professionals. So if you fancy working for a James Bond organization, there's probably a job going for you. So when we talk about the attack vectors, we're talking about denial of service attacks, potential attacks on transportation, GPS tracking disruption, cell phone jamming, financial infrastructure. These can be devastating for large countries or even small countries even. Question, why have I, shout out, why have I put the top four there in red? Any ideas? Life-threatening. That's absolutely right. They're life-threatening. So, obviously, power grid disruption, internet communications, air traffic control, water and food, pollution. These are potentially life-threatening. So this is very much serious stuff. Mitigation. For me and you, there is none. We cannot mitigate this. This is beyond our pay grade. So, coming in at number three. A game of phones. Okay? So, again, this is it's an emerging attack. It's like the boiling frog story that Marcus said yesterday. This is becoming a real problem. And, again, it's a new attack vector. We're all using multiple mobile devices now. Slates, tablets, iPads, pods, everything. Every type of device. So, we're not just limited to PCs or laptops now. So we have to take our security seriously, and we have to look at all of these platforms. So looking at Android, I'm sure you're aware there's been a lot of press about Android types of attacks. These are just some of the various Trojans that have been out there. You've got to remember, though, that when you look at the reason why Android is getting attacked, frustratingly for Microsoft, is because Android is open source software and people don't want to pay for stuff, so they get the stuff for free. So you can see the number of sales for Android is going sky high, while the other platforms are fairly kind of low. Now, maybe that'll change. People might say, hey, I'm using a Windows phone, I never get attacked. Don't be naive. Don't be naive and think just because you're running a particular type of branded phone. There was a great story yesterday about a new type of attack on Apple using power chargers. I thought that was quite clever. But when you also look at the malware types of attacks, so the bad guys are shifting focus now very much on malware. And you can see that the 163% over the last 12 months. Actually, do you know what the figure was in the 12 months before that? It was 210% in the 12 months before that. So this is now becoming a real focus for the bad guy. And if you don't know about these platforms, you're supporting bring your own device on your network, then you need to learn about this stuff. Okay, so it's not just about PCs or Windows anymore. You, as an IT pro, as a security professional, we need to support these multiple areas. And a lot of people say, okay, does that mean I've got my iPhone, my Windows phone? Does that mean I'm going to get hacked? Well, in most cases, the reason why those figures were hacked was because the phone, everybody wants free stuff. Yeah, you don't want to pay for stuff. Gosh, you could almost be Scottish. Okay. excuse me, I'll buy anybody a pint, okay? So, at the party tomorrow night, I'll buy you all a drink, okay? So, seriously though, if you don't want to get malicious code on your... Now, I'm not saying that this is the absolute guarantee, but jailbreaking phones, yes, okay, it's cool, you'll get the free stuff. But you'll also get stuff that you won't want as well. Are you prepared for that? So, if you're prepared for that, if you're going to do that, then don't have any personal stuff on your phone. Don't have Facebook. Don't have email. Don't put your personal numbers on the phone. Then you're fine. That's fine if you want to do that. Okay? There is some particularly nasty stuff out there in terms of software. There's some particularly very nice security and cool tools out there for Android as well. So mitigations, don't jailbreak your phones. That's the key thing. I know this sounds stupid, but add a PIN number. It's amazing how many people I know that don't even have a PIN number on their phone. Some of the new platforms now even have facial recognition. And you think, oh, well, I could just stick a picture in front of it. No, it's 3D facial recognition. So we're moving away from PIN numbers and just kind of passwords. And that's good. The industry needs to move away from that. So that's interesting. Install reputable antivirus software on your system as well, on your phone, on your iPad, on your tablet device, on your new Windows Surface. Who got one of those, by the way? Yeah? Woohoo! Great. What a great marketing tool. By the way, the new version's out on Monday. Did you know? Damn, man! Okay, so consider substituting phone, installing phone tracking software as well. Yeah, I'm a bit, yesterday, in fact, I'll be showing this today, there's a little tool out there called Mobile Monitor, and it's, if you suspect that your kids are up to no good, are my kids up to no good? You can monitor them. You can monitor every movement of them. It's a little creepy, don't you think? Okay. But you can do that. Okay, there is no such thing as a free lunch, though. Definitely remember that. So, if you want the free stuff, you're going to pay one way or another. Mitigations, other things there. So what can we do for enterprise? Well, I was talking about Office 365. In Microsoft Exchange, of course, if your phone's stolen, you can do a remote wipe, you can reset it, you can do all kinds of stuff. You can also do that for BlackBerry and Apple and all those other platforms. So getting those types of services is great. Patch management. I read recently that a number of vendors in the US have been a little slow in patching phones. This is something that I think consumers, as consumers, at some point you need to stand up and say, hey, you know, this is not right. We need to actually sort that out. Because you, just like your laptops, just like your PCs, a phone has an OS, it needs to be updated to avoid any problems. And of course, training, and I've mentioned that training issue. I thought this was a great story, by the way. This woman stole a phone, and she inadvertently took a picture of herself, and it basically dialed home. So we actually got a picture of the thief. I thought that was quite a cool picture. Coming in at number two, is the rise and the rise of the dark web. So the dark web is reputed, basically said to be about three times larger than the internet. This is going to take you to a dark place, so I'll warn you, okay? And be very, very careful with what I'm about to show you, please. So, what is the dark web? Basically, thousands and thousands of websites. It uses something called the Tor network. Now, the Tor network, it had a very good idea. It was actually designed by the US military. And the idea was that if there are countries around the world where there are dissidents or where there are people who are being repressed, they don't have access to the internet, or they don't have access to certain sites to get their messages out, that they can use this Tor network to come through. And you think, oh, yes, that sounds very noble. Unfortunately, though, it's been taken, it's been manipulated, and a lot of damage has actually been done. So it's rumored to be three times larger than the internet. It uses complete stealth IP addressing. So it is a way that you can be truly anonymous on the web. Now, am I truly anonymous? Yes, you are truly anonymous. It will give you a unique IP address, and you can generate a new identity in every session. The only thing is, though, of course, if you're still running applications, potentially we can still track you through those applications. So the applications don't change, of course. It's just the infrastructure that changes. We've also seen a massive growth in the use of these sites. Such as Bitcoin. So Bitcoin, I'm sure we've all read about. It's now becoming the currency of the dark web. Okay, and of course it circumvents things like money laundering as well. So again, I'm not saying it's completely bad, but there is strong evidence to show that it's not entirely a good thing either. So, of course, the dark web is really nothing new. It started years ago. 4chan, of course, was a news group bulletin board. This is how Anonymous started over 10 years ago. Now, websites like this, though, have definitely moved to a much darker kind of feel. So you probably heard about this website. This is called the Silk Road. The Silk Road is a drugs website, drugs and guns, as you can see. You can buy anything. It's like the eBay for the bad guy. And the thing about the Silk Road is they can't shut it down because it changes every day. It moves to a different location every day. And it's very, very difficult to track down. Another website is the Hidden Wiki. This is the one I'm going to show you in a second. The Hidden Wiki, again, it's kind of a door in. It's kind of Wikipedia for bad guys. It seriously is. But it's got some very cool stuff on it, by the way. So, yes, you can download a movie in there, but you can also download the 3D gun plan that was recently banned. And that's only the basic stuff. You can order guns, prostitutes, sex slaves, whatever you want. I mean, which is fine. Some of you look like you might need those things. I don't know. So, Underground Market Board, this is just one slide that I took. You can see African children for sale. Apparently Madonna visits this site regularly. oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, there's a web page, actually. I forgot to put this on in my SkyDrive. I'll provide you with this. Look, you see all the bad guys at the back going, whoa, this is great stuff, look at this. Okay. So what we'll do is let's have a look at the dark web. So first up, I'm going to open up Internet Explorer. I will do, let's say, Google, everybody's favorite Microsoft search engine. Okay. Okay, I'm going to type in the hidden wiki. Okay, so type in the hidden wiki, what do we get? Hidden wiki, Wikipedia, Wikipedia.org, how to find it, Wikipedia, how to enter it, how to access it, can anybody do it, how do we find it? Okay, it's not there. I can't get access to it there. Okay? So, what I need to do is I need to open this Tor browser. So what this is doing is this is connecting me to using an anonymous IP address now. So it's changing my IP address. You can see, okay, so it's now connected me to a new web browser. I can see who's on the network. So you can see these guys are all over the world, everywhere, okay? And you can use a new identity, so I can generate a new identity at any point. Again, you can send secure messages between people. Let's have a look now. So if I go back to... Now, I actually tried this in Google earlier. So if I type in the hidden wiki... And actually, I'm sure Google blocked it. Let's try it. Okay, so you can see here, this is going through an encrypted channel. Okay, so you can see you ain't getting away with this. So, you know, I'm thinking, yeah, okay. You know, I'm going to go with Bing. Now, some of you out there are probably thinking... oh yeah, Bing. That's the Microsoft one, right? Okay, so hidden wiki. Okay, so again, you get those same kind of websites and info. Ah, now this looks a little bit more promising. Okay, so you can see this is just a random number, a random IP, a random name, and this changes all the time. So I say, that looks interesting. Let's have a look at that one. And you can see it's going through the onion. So the onion is essentially the onion web. It peels away the internet to make sure it's completely anonymous. Now, the thing about using the Tor network, of course, is it does have risks. In fact, quite a lot of risks. And depending on where you go, the risks involve men in flak jackets and black vans. Okay, so just be aware of that. Okay, so Onion, yes, I want to basically leapfrog through here, and you can see, reporting abuse. Okay, sure. I want to abuse you. Let's see what we can see. So, shall we? Yeah. Anybody want to make any purchases while I'm here? Okay, so this is the hidden wiki. And you think, okay, this looks nice. And to be honest, there's a lot on here that's, you know, if you want free stuff, that's great. But as you start looking through this, you then say, okay, let's see what we can see, first of all. Okay, introduction points, financial services, the green machine, Bitcoin financial, double your bitcoins. Okay, these are illegal sites. Commercial services, what commercial services? Drug market, okay, Foxfires, Herb Society. I don't think that's garden herbs, by the way. UK guns and ammunition, Euro arms. Second ID, Rent-A-Hacker, what's that, Marcus Murray, okay, I know him, Skimmers for Sale, How to Make a Bomb, okay, is that sponsored by the CIA, okay, Okay, what else have we got here? U.S. citizenship, how to get into U.S. citizenship. Hire a hitman, the Hitman Network. There you go. Ah, I can finally get rid of Paula. Okay, only an ID, so you can see here. But then we go down a little bit further, and then we start seeing some hosting sites here. And Onion Hosting, I can tell you, by the way, do not go into these sites. These are pretty nasty child pornographic sites. And also, these are serious drug dealers, serious, serious bad people. And also, there are a number of intelligence agencies that put honey nets in here as well. So be very, very careful in what you click here. All right? But go very, very carefully with that particular website. Somebody's at the back going, "Yo, dude, this is great, man." Okay, so there we go. That's just a little bit of the dark web. Again, because I'm being broadcast today, I actually do want to come back to Tech Ed next year, so if you'll forgive me. So, number one, Mr. Bolt here. Did anybody go to the Olympics in London, by the way? Did you watch the Olympics here? Yes? Did they put commercials like every 5 minutes? Oh man, I couldn't be doing with that. Thank God for the BBC. Okay, so in at number one, does anybody want to take a guess at what number one is? Shout it out. Who? Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was a good one. Us, the human being. Because without us, we would have none of this. Okay, and I'm afraid we are still the weakest link. Okay? So the key thing about security, of course, is we are all responsible for security. If you know that these things are going on, we know. Governments know that sites like the Tor network take place. Okay? But we can't shut them down because they're taking away my freedom. They're taking away your freedom for what? So ignorance is no excuse. The fear factor. Okay. Often people get into trouble because they're afraid. They're afraid to come forward. Yesterday I did a session on social networking security. Okay. Remember, not everybody on Facebook wants to be your friend. Okay. There are some nasty people out there. So again, watch out for that. Don't be too social. Don't share your life on these social networking sites. And also be very, very aware of your physical security. Okay? Now, I mentioned yesterday that there are about 800,000 Chinese spies in the world that China have got for industrial espionage. It's a well-known documented number. And I can tell you about 500,000 of those are Chinese. They openly recruit whites, blacks, Caucasians, anybody to basically hack. And they apparently pay very well. So, there is always going to be one rotten apple in a company. So, whether he's a disgruntled employee, whether he's a bit down on his luck, he's had his job, he's a bit hacked off, he wants a change of pace, he thinks he can just make some money. This guy will sell you out. He doesn't care about you. He doesn't care about your family. To him, it's all about money. And you have to adjust your business accordingly. So mitigation for this guy. You need to develop sound HR plans, HR policies. You need to do full and ongoing background checks on people, including social network checks. Implement ongoing employee development programs as well. So don't let the disgruntled employee be disgruntled. Give him something to work for. Okay? And again, always have a solid internal review process. Okay? And think about how you're going to manage this. Now, I did mention yesterday, this is the poster. Newcastle in England had a real problem with bike theft. And what they did is they stuck this poster up. And within a 12-month period, bicycle thefts had dropped purely because of this poster. So it just goes to show you that deterrents do work.
Hello, citizens of the world.
Greetings. We are not anonymous. We represent the law enforcement community. It has come to our attention that many of you consider yourselves to be above the law and assume that we simply sit by and watch, doing nothing while you steal movies, music, and software from pirate websites. You may even be involved with hacking, drugs, money laundering, or worse. It does not matter to us. Please do not be fooled by our quiet inaction. Every person has a digital footprint. And this digital footprint will be your Achilles heel. So while you and your friends continue to exploit these so-called anonymous resources, remember this. We are watching. And we are waiting. And when the time is right, we will not forgive. And we will not forget.
Hold it. Run that back.
Wait a minute. Go right. There, freeze that.
Full screen.
Okay, freeze that.
Tighten up on that thing.
Vector in on that guy by the back wheel.
Zoom in right here at this spot.
With the right equipment, the image could be enlarged and sharpened.
What's that?
It's an enhancement program.
Can you clear that up any?
I don't know. Let's enhance it.
Enhance section A6.
I enhance the detail and...
There's been hands released into my screen.
It has the reflection in her eye.
Let's run this through video enhancement.
Victor, can you enhance this?
Hang on.
I've been working on this reflection.
Someone's reflection.
A reflection.
There's a reflection of the man's face.
A reflection.
There's a reflection.
Zoom in on the mirror.
You can see a reflection.
Can you enhance the image from here?
Can you enhance him right here?
Can you enhance it?
Can you enhance it?
Can we enhance this?
Can you enhance it?
Hold on a second, I'll enhance.
Zoom in on the door.
Times 10.
Zoom.
Move in.
More.
Wait, stop.
Stop.
Pause it.
Rotate a 75 degrees around the vertical, please.
Stop. And go back to the part about the door again.
Got an image enhancer that can fit that?
Maybe we can use the pretty deep scent method to see into the windows.
This software is state of the art.
The eigenvalue is off.
With the right combination of algorithms.
He's taken illumination algorithms to the next level, and I can use them to enhance this photograph.
Lock on and enlarge the Z-axis.
Enhance.
Enhance.
Enhance. Freeze and enhance.
Okay, so the top 10. By the way, you can get my extras if you sign up to my SkyDrive at Andy Malone. So we've seen the top 10. Number 10, we've got the botnets, zombie attacks. Number 9, distributed denial of service. Number 7, cloud security. Number 7, rise of the hacktivist. The value of trust or the failure of trust. Traditional cybercrime versus state-sponsored crime in at number 5. Number 4, is it cyber warfare? Number 3, attack of the phones. The rise of the dark web at number 2. And the humble human being in at number 1. I hope that you've enjoyed this session. I'm going to be next door talking about surveillance versus the erosion of freedom. My name is Andy Malone. Thank you very much. Okay.